Coming up this week, we're talking digital radio as the government announces its response to the consultation that's been running this year on small-scale DAB multiplexes. James Cridden will be here to examine whether you actually need a studio or even an office for your radio station these days. And David Lloyd takes us on a trip back in time with Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First, Radio Today's founder and editor, Roy Martin, is with us as usual to start the podcast and look through what's big in radio this week. Hello, Roy.
You never say your name, do you, at the beginning of the show? Who are you?
Yeah, what's your name? Doesn't matter. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, I'm Stuart Clarkson. If you haven't, I'm Roy Martin. So we're going to talk in this podcast a little bit later with some people who've been running SSDAB trials. What are you thinking about what DCMS have said this week on future small scale? They seem to have made some concessions to what people said in the consultation.
Yeah, I think it's as expected. We've got lots of rules and regulations that we'll be following once they actually come into law and come into being. And one thing they haven't said is how many there are going to be, but I guess they don't know the answer to that. Are we expecting one in every village, in every small town, or are they just big city-wide multiplexes? Do we know where they're going to be? Have we any idea?
No, I mean, I think some of the multiplex operators obviously are hoping, the ones who have been running the trials, are hoping the trials will be licensed first and then perhaps some urban areas after that. But I'm guessing the reason Ofcom did their little expression of interest process was to find out where the demand is. So if there happens to be a lot of demand in rural areas, then maybe those will get licensed before the others. We'll have to wait and see. But you know, I don't think we're any further on timescales. That's the thing that's probably come out of this. It still could be a whole year before they're actually handing out the first SSDAB multiplex licenses.
Yeah, if not longer. I envisage 2020 before any multiplexes are actually on the air. So it's a long game. And an interesting process as well, because literally anybody can apply for one of these and run their own multiplex. And assuming they're successful, anybody can be a gatekeeper to having radio stations on the air, which is what DAB is all about. It's what the multiplexes have been so far. But it just seems weird that me or you could, you know, end up with a multiplex if we applied.
Yeah, I'm all up for that, definitely. Why have a radio station to play with when you can have a multiplex to play with? That's what I say.
So are you applying for one?
Well, we'll see. We'll see what areas are put forward, and we'll take it from there, I think, for me. How about you?
Interesting. Well, I might have one or two fingers in one or two pies. So, yeah, it's an interesting time. And looking forward to the thoughts of Ash and David, who are coming on the podcast later on to talk about it.
And yes, hopefully I'll make more money running a multiplex than I do presenting a podcast, but we'll see. Talking of making a stack load of money, moving swiftly on, Global have really gone for it in the out-of-home advertising market, haven't they? Exterion Media now added to their global outdoor empire this week. We didn't see the first purchases come in, but we certainly didn't see the second one coming either.
We didn't, and I think somebody did back-of-the-stamp calculations, and in the same quarter were Global bought the likes of Juice Brighton and 2BR in Burnley. He spent £1 billion on building a new outdoor division, so radio stations seem like small change at the moment.
And TV stations closed at Global as well. They've pulled the plug on Capital TV and Heart TV this week, which I suppose that was always going to be a difficult market to get into. They've got the brands there, obviously, and the artists, but it was getting into quite a crowded area of the EPG where you've got music stations.
Yeah, I think as a wise man once said, if you can't be number one or number two in your market, then don't bother.
Hey, the exodus from Radio 1 continued this week as well after DJ Semtex and Charlie Sloth announced they were leaving B-Traits. She's off as well.
Yeah, and it appears to be unconnected, he says, until she turns up at Beats One in a couple of weeks' time. But it looks like she's very busy with her record producing and everything else she's got going on. So probably unconnected. But yeah, there is a trend there of people disappearing from Radio One. So one to watch.
We are going to be talking about transmission a bit on this podcast as well. There's been a bit of a rejig in Wales of FM. It's happening next week, actually. So Radio 3 will disappear from some FM frequencies. Radio Wales going on them instead as they move the frequencies around. And it's all good for Radio Wales because it's going to massively increase the number of people who can listen to Radio Wales on FM. So celebrations in Llandaff, no doubt.
Mmm, lots of chocolate. Mmm. So as people look at DAB as the future, the FM band is still being rejigged for the best purpose. So it just proves that FM is going to still be here in 20 years from now, I'd say.
We've just noticed today, as we're recording this, Tuesday, that iPlayer Radio has disappeared from the BBC's website if you go on a desktop. So they've rebranded it all as BBC Sounds. This is ahead of the BBC Sounds app full launch, which I think is it later this month or next month? The word Sounds has appeared online.
And that makes sense. The more you think about it, the more it makes sense that, I mean, iPlay for radio, that just sounds horrible. So BBC Sounds covers everything from radio to podcasting to audio downloads and documentaries, anything that is audio. You could call it audio, but sound is a much more consumer-friendly word. So, yeah, looking forward to the launch of that. And the official launch party, I think, is the 30th of October in London. So I should let you know how it goes. I think I've sneaked an invite for that one.
Oh, lucky you. And a new DAB station we're talking about this week as well on Radio Today. And we've seen a lot of niche stations come and go, and a lot of them have survived and are doing very well, like Fix Radio. And Fix Radio is giving way on a Sunday afternoon to Property Radio, which seems like a nice fit. So it's a radio station, but just on a Sunday afternoon in London on DAB.
Yeah. Which is encouraging for my world domination plans for Jingle Mad Radio every Tuesday night in Dorchester.
You never know. Might happen one day. So there's lots coming up over the coming weeks. We're really into event season, of course, this week. If it's not happened by the time you listen to this podcast, it's the Segway event in Leeds Wednesday, Thursday, and the Arias Thursday night with Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Tony Hadley performing, and lots of awards being given out. We will be there. I'm looking forward to seeing you this week.
Yeah, maybe by the time people listen to this, I'll have already seen you and got fed up with your company. You never know. Just joking.
Too kind. So I'll be backstage talking to winners as they come off the stage picking up their ARIA awards, and you'll be able to hear those interviews on this podcast next week. And then what else is going on? Oh, it's Rajar. There's the BBC Sounds launch. We've got the Student of Radio Awards coming up. Nominations just out this week. They're all at radiotoday.co.uk. And then there's going to be the Audio Production Awards and Vox, the kind of voiceover awards and conference. And then TechCon as well in November. And I think that kind of probably wraps it up before Christmas. So there's tons of things going on around the industry over the next month or so. So have a look at all the listings on Radio Today and get yourself to an event and meet some people and network and find out more.
It's annoying, really, because all the bulk of the events take place at the end of the year, which people don't know the dates for at the beginning of the year. So I can't include on the Radio Today wall planner, which is what I'm currently putting together at the moment and struggling to find dates. Event dates to put on for this time next year, so we'll probably go to press without all the events for the latter end of next year. But the IRN Awards, should know that soon, the date for that. We've got the Hospital Radio Awards and Conference just announced for March. I think they're going to Stoke-on-Trent. Lucky people. And the International Radio Festival and things like that should all be on there as well.
Excellent. And of course, if you get our daily and weekly emails from Radio Today, which you can sign up for at radiotoday.co.uk, then you'll get all those events listed in your email, dropping into your inbox every week or every day. So that's definitely worth doing. Well, I will see you in Leeds. Lucky me.
Indeed. Looking forward to driving up the M1.
And if you've got any comments about the podcast and what you're about to hear about the discussion on small-scale digital radio, then do get involved. We're at Radio Today on Twitter. You can email us news@radiotoday.co.uk. He's at Roy Martin, and I'm at Stuart Clarkson with a U.
And I'm off for At Lunch.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
You're listening to the Radio Today programme, and this week the DCMS put out its response to the consultation that's been running on the future of small-scale DAB multiplexes. There have been trials, of course, going on over the last 3 years, 10 locations around England and one in Scotland, 9 in England, 1 in Scotland. And we can talk on the podcast this week to two people who've been heavily involved in those trials. David Duffy is with us from Niacast, which runs the Manchester SSDAB multiplex, and Ash Elford from the community station Angel Radio in Portsmouth, running the Portsmouth multiplex and also working with Nation Radio on the trial multiplex in Glasgow. Welcome both of you to the podcast.
Hello.
In unison as well. So just so our listeners can kind of get to grips with what you guys have been doing over the last few years with the small scale trials before we go on to talk about what DCMS have said this week. Ash, first tell us about your involvement in small scale digital radio and how it's gone for you.
Well, do you know what, Stu? I can't believe it's been 3 years now that we've been on air, but we've proved that digital radio broadcasting doesn't have to be difficult. We launched 69 days after Ofcom gave us our license. We have been broadcasting DAB Plus longer than any other multiplex in the country, so we beat Arqiva to it. And we've bought some really interesting niche formats and community services to broadcast that were previously, you know, that were previously priced out of digital radio broadcasting, and we've made sure that nobody gets left behind. And going forward, we want to build on that success.
David, how's your experience been?
Yeah, I mean, I'll second what Ash has said. I mean, I can't believe it's been 3 years. But when I look back at what we've achieved, the whole trial, but specifically Manchester, we've had 40 stations on the multiplex in 3 years. A third of those community radio stations, just under a third small-scale commercial radio stations, and eight currently at the moment. We've got eight stations that are, you know, completely spontaneous creations for this new tier of radio. So it is really exciting, and it's innovative. So, you know, we were second after Ash to move to all DAB Plus, and at one stage we did get last year as many as 26 DAB Plus stations on our multiplex, which, you know, was the largest, most populous multiplex in the world. So between us all, amongst the 10, there's been a number of firsts. So it's been a great 3 years.
Ash, we're going to come on to what the CMA have said this week very soon. But obviously your Portsmouth multiplex, I think, is a not-for-profit multiplex, and its involvement with a community radio station. How has that element played out? Has it been a good experiment?
I think it's been interesting, yeah. I mean, I think if Angel was doing it again, we probably would have put it into a separate company like I know they've done with Future Radio and Future Digital in Norwich. I mean, there is some risk to running a multiplex. So, yeah, it can be good for community radio stations as a source of generating, you know, income to pay for the community radio station and the transmission. But obviously there is a cost to setting these things up and keeping them going. And like I've said previously, this is low-cost digital radio, not no-cost digital radio. You know, there is still a cost to this all.
We'll point out as well, that's Ash's two-year-old in the background, radio's youngest geek, so it's good to have some youth listening to the Radio Today programme. So if you're wondering what the noise is in the background. In terms of the DCMS response then this week to the consultation, there's a lot in there. What sticks out for each of you that you either welcome or want to see some more work done on from what they've said? And also, do you think they've listened to what you as consultees and what the industry has said as a whole? David?
It's very positive from our point of view. I mean, our response to the consultation we published on our website at niacast.com. So we're quite happy with what we asked them to look at from our point of view and what the response is. There's still a little bit of clarification which is required, I think, which, I mean, they talked about the hard reservation of spots and slots for community radio and set out a minimum of three. But then they've had to pass over to Ofcom what that three minimum actually means. Does it mean three DAB slots at 128K, or does it mean three DAB plus slots at 32K? So it's very welcome, but there's still a little bit more fine detail to be done. But I think it's good news all round. Nobody gets everything they want in this world, so I think it's a fair compromise. We put forward a suggestion of a Kickstarter fund. This is something I would really like to see embraced, because the Community Media Association have advocated for a lot, and they have got some things, but not everything. And I think the idea of a Kickstarter fund, which would complement the Community Radio Fund, or the Community Media Fund at the moment, of about £500,000. So another £500,000, which actually could be given to community radio stations to pay their way onto DAB for the first year. I think that's a good idea. It was mentioned in the consultation response by DCMS, and I would like to see that one just pushed a little bit more by everybody involved.
And as a multiplex operator, would you be looking to charge community radio stations the same as a commercial radio station, or have you during the trial been doing a discount for those community stations?
The trial is a rarefied place, so it's evolved. Originally it was only a 9-month trial, and then there was a 2-year extension, and now we're in receipt of a further 2-year extension, although I'm delighted that I don't think we'll still be in a trial status 12 months from now. Like everything else, pricing has evolved, and I think if we were starting it now, we would start it completely as DAB Plus, because there is a huge demand out there, and the only way to satisfy that demand is to put everybody, or as many people as you can, on the multiplex. And I think it's only right and proper that the reserved space for community stations should be offered at a discounted price. I think that's what the intended meaning of this consultation response from DCMS is, and I think it is the right and proper thing to do. So the reserve space should, and I think this is going to come down to be a beauty parade, as they say. I don't particularly like that term, but I think it's going to be competitive. So I think it's only right and proper that when people apply for these licenses, they make special regard of the hard reserved space, which is for community radio, and it should be priced appropriately. Let me just leave that, because it'll be different for every area. So, and I think I like that freedom, but I personally speaking, I think it should be at a discounted level.
Yeah, and I mean, the CMA in its response says it wants priority in those beauty parades given to existing community radio stations where they are stakeholders and beneficiaries from the multiplexes, i.e. they're going to get a free slot, and they're also going to get some cash from the stations going on the multiplex to help with the funding for the community station, which I guess is what you've done with Angel, isn't it, Ash?
Well, do you know what, Stuart? I was just going to say, I think the elephant in the room here, actually, with the allocating space to community stations is that the DCMS don't say that the capacity has to be reserved for existing stations that are on FM or AM. You know, this could be any eligible organisation to hold a CDSP licence. So it's by no means a given that a station may necessarily get onto the multiplex.
Those CDSP licences, we know they're going to be easy to get for the stations who've already got an FM community licence. But do you actually think there'll be demand for new groups wanting a CDSP? Why would those groups not get a commercial one?
Because obviously with the CDSP license, one of the things that's been mooted is access to the Community Radio Fund. So if you see yourself as a genuine community broadcaster, and you want to, you know, apply for various grants, that may be the route that you want to take. I mean, we've had some stations here in Portsmouth that have eventually migrated to FM as community stations. So I think it shouldn't be in areas, especially metropolitan areas, where there's a shortage of FM or AM spectrum. I don't think it should be underestimated that there are groups waiting in the wings. I mean, if you look at last year with Ofcom asking for expressions of interest in community broadcasting, they had a significant number of responses to that. So I don't think it should be underestimated. I mean, Angel's view and Nation's view is that, you know, we would want to work with, you know, proper established, you know, community broadcasters that are on FM and AM. But I'm just saying that shouldn't be taken as a given for, you know, elsewhere in the UK.
one of the things the CMA has said, and we did invite them to come on the podcast, but they weren't available. But one of the things that they have said is that they feel some community stations could be priced out of having a digital future because of commercialization of these small scale multiplexes, which is why they've been pushing for the kind of not for profit ones to get preference. But David, from your point of view, surely running the multiplex is about delivering some profit.
I think it's always been foremost, certainly in Ofcom's process of awarding licenses, that they look at the financials and the viability and the sustainability. And that's not to say a not-for-profit operation can't offer that, but it will be one of the criteria when they're looking, and these will be competitively applied for licenses. So they will inevitably, they have to. It's a key responsibility for them to make sure when they're giving out spectrum that it is allocated to somebody who is going to keep it for the 7 plus 5 years of the license duration. So I think that is important. That is a fundamental. So given that, I don't think that excludes either party. I think both of them can prove to be viable routes to market. In some places, a more commercial operation may be suitable. In other places, a community consortia. And I think that's what's great coming out of this document is that it hasn't been proscribed by DCMS. They've basically said, look, we don't mind what kind of organisation applies for these licences. They just need to meet the necessary criteria. So no one's been excluded.
Just going to take up David's point about no one being excluded. I mean, one of the problems wearing my Nation broadcasting hats is obviously there's a 50% ownership limit if you already own a commercial multiplex. And Nation owns two multiplexes in Wales. Now, for us, what that means is that you have this bizarre situation where Bauer, for example, own the existing countywide multiplexes in the northeast of England. But yet Sun FM would not be able to own its local, you know, its small-scale multiplex for Sunderland. We'd be capped at 50% because of our shareholding elsewhere. So that does seem a little unfair to us. You know, we can be a good organisation towards smaller broadcasters, but yet because of a shareholding in Wales, we're penalised for our ownership in the northeast.
Yeah, I think that's one certainly that Ofcom probably need to look at before they move forward with it. In terms of, again, the CMA worry, their worry was that those big urban populated areas will be given to commercial MUX operators, whereas the rural ones that aren't perhaps going to make any money are going to be where the community broadcasters pick up the ruins of what's left. So I suppose that is a genuine concern that some of the community operators might have.
I mean, one of the weird things that's come out of this, Stuart, is DCMS have changed the position from the coverage areas of these small-scale multiplexes being based on no bigger than 40% population of the county MUX as opposed to 40% of the geography. And in my opinion, that does affect the rural small-scale multiplexes more just because of the concentration of where the populations are. I mean, I just think Norwich is one that springs to mind, where the population is very much concentrated on the city and there's not really much in the area around it. Well, previously, under 40% of geography, it would have been quite easy to cover that location, whereas now that may well be a different matter. So I'm a bit disappointed that it's changed to 40% of population of a county MUX. I mean, that probably won't make much of a difference in the metropolitan areas, but I think in the rural, more rural areas, that will be more of a challenge for community radio.
Okay, in terms of the money and the rates, obviously there is a wide gap between what the small scale trials have been charging and what those countywide or national multiplexes are charging. Publication of rate cards is something that's been mentioned by the DCMS. It seemed broadly welcomed in their consultation. Are you both happy that rate cards would be out there, and would you like to see that extended to the national multiplex operators as well?
I would say, from my point of view, I've always said that, for example, license duration, exactly the same rules should apply from national to local to small scale. And I think the same is true with pricing. If we have to publish our pricing, which I am absolutely all for, I think the others should have to produce their pricing. I don't know why it has to be such a secret. We've always talked about being able to have a pricing structure which is complementary but also competitive with the larger mucks. You know, if you can pay a few thousand pounds a month, you're going to get on the bigger multiplex. If you can't play at that level, you need to be able to play at a smaller level, particularly in metropolitan areas where a lot of the multiplexes are full. They're completely full. I mean, we hosted Bauer, a superb six-week pop-up of an ABBA station, and that was because there was no room on a multiplex in which they have a share in Manchester. So they couldn't get on their own multiplex. So it was a great opportunity to host them as a pop-up and then return that space to the use by the kinds of stations that we have and who play at our level. So the publication of pricing, I think, is a good thing. It won't sort everything out, but it'll be very interesting to see what pricing is out there.
The other thing about pricing rate cards, you know, we don't have a problem with that. We've always been open about what we're charging for capacity. But the other thing is obviously is to consider that rate cards should be rate cards. I mean, there's always room for negotiation on both sides. So I would hate to see it be in a situation where in the future we find ourselves bound to what the rate card prices are. So I hope, although I do agree with rate cards, I hope that there is still flexibility between operators to negotiate if they feel that's the right thing to do.
And that's one of the examples, isn't it, Ash, where there's a lack of detail in the document. You need to take the document down on a number of these issues to the next level to understand what they actually mean by publishing a rate card, because prices change. You know, the market is changing all the time. So do you have to publish a rate card? Are they going to enforce that we keep it static for 12 months? So there's a lot more work that is needed to take this document to a level at which we'll be able to execute small-scale DAB across the country.
Obviously, the bigger multiplexes have historically charged on units. So if you take a higher bitrate space, that would cost you more. Have you guys been doing that in the trial? And when we talked about the reserved space for community radio, if Ofcom are reserving 128k stereo times three, then that's going to cost those stations more than a commercial operator wanting to go at 48k on DAB+.
Really, that just follows on from what we were saying a moment ago about rate cards and there needing to be flexibility. There's got to be flexibility as to what is allocated and to what services should be able to sign up to, for sure. I mean, in terms of what we're doing already, yeah, we do have flexible rate cards. So, you know, our community stations don't pay the same as the commercial stations because that's how this has got to work. The small scale DAB, really, the principle behind it is to get community broadcasters on board. So it's right that they should be on a different tier to what the commercial groups are paying. So that's exactly what we've done in Portsmouth and we'll be doing in Glasgow as well.
David?
The three figure is actually a minimum. So it looks as if when the licences are advertised, they will be advertised with Ofcom actually making an assessment of how much space should be hard reserved for community radio. And in metropolitan areas, key areas like Manchester, that figure won't be three. It'll be higher than that. It could be five, it could be eight. If it's eight and all the spaces are reserved at 128k, then you've only got space for one more DAB station. So the practicalities of this really need to be looked at. And one of our big questions was the CDSPS license, because obviously that gives you access to this reserved area. The question I have about CDSPS licenses, which isn't answered in the consultation document, is that's okay for existing analog stations because it's a route from analog to digital, and that should be a given. But what happens to stations that just come along and see that they can get access to that space by applying for a CDSPS license in preference to a DSPS license? Okay, they can change their business model so it's more social and more community orientated. So they satisfy Ofcom, they get into this space, they get access to the goodie bag that isn't the community radio fund, but they get that allocated space and they get it at a preferential rate, because as I said, I think a lot of us are looking at that space being given at a discounted rate. So these things all link to one another, and it isn't quite clear with the CDSPS licenses quite what they're going to allow.
Last couple of things, because I know we're rattling on a bit here. Okay. Quick word about coverage and transmission. Obviously, as small-scale multiplex operators, to be able to keep the access cost low for stations, you need your operating costs to be lower. Can SSDAB going forward get the same quality and signal strength as the local and national multiplexes in your area that you're competing with if you're doing that on tops of buildings and town halls and sheds on farms rather than having to pay the high costs that Arqiva would charge you to go on their masts?
I'm sure Ash will probably have a lovely technical explanation, so I'll jump in very quickly and just say, from our point of view, the 40% of population serves the metropolitan areas really well, as opposed to the 40% of area. So it should allow densely populated areas in this country to be served without the need to move to single frequency networks, i.e. multiple transmitters, because that's the big cost. The initial cost of setting up one of these things is a given, but if you then have to have two or three repeater transmitter sites, that adds to the cost of the equipment. But more importantly, you have to then find alternate sites, rooftops of buildings, for example, to put these on. And the rental cost of those just drives the cost up. So being able to serve this thing from one transmitter, one antenna, is great. I must say, though, an important thing is that we have equivalents of signal strength. So even though our physical area will be a fraction of bigger multiplexes and obviously a very minor subset of the national multiplex, the experience of a listener within the measured coverage area of that multiplex must be exactly the same as anybody hopping onto another ensemble. So the listener experience has to be at the centre of the development of this new tier of radio.
Yeah, so following on from what David says, really, you know, I can't argue with equivalence because listeners expect their radios to have the same quality for each station, regardless where it comes from. They don't really care about multiplexes or anything like that. So, do you know, you can get good coverage by being on rooftops in town centres. I mean, if you think about these multiplexes having smaller coverage areas, then one argument you can have from broadcasting from rooftops in town centres is you actually are where the population is. And working with community groups, a lot of these groups already broadcast from rooftops themselves in town centres, so you could build up a decent network of coverage. Like David says, though, it's the, you know, the field strength has to, we've got to have parity with the commercial operators, and that means no arbitrary limits on what the transmitter powers are. With single frequency networks, we're about to start one in Portsmouth, funnily enough, and with our second transmitter, hopefully more details will be revealed to you guys in the near future, but we're going to be using a new type of transmitter which should be very low cost to operate. So we may find that where there are coverage holes, they're not actually too difficult or expensive to fix. The other thing that I'd say that's a risk to coverage for these small-scale multiplexes is Arqiva. I mean, Angel Radio mentioned it in our consultation response to the DCMS, and I see that SSBC have said the same in theirs. We found Arqiva very, very difficult to deal with in securing agreement to launch new transmitters, whereas other commercial operators and the BBC have been quite cooperative. My personal experience, and I see from the consultation SSVCs, is that Arqiva have been very difficult to deal with. And I hope that changes, because it will make it very difficult to roll out these new multiplexes without their cooperation.
Interesting point. We'll follow that one. And both big advocates of small-scale multiplexes, so I presume you just want this to get moving now. You know, it was initially a nine-month trial. We're already 3 years down the line, and we still haven't really got any timescales other than it could happen next year. So I presume you two just want to see this government getting on with it.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, while we're happy we've got an extension, I really would rather have not have had a license extension and just be on to permanent licensing by now. But we are where we are, and I would urge anyone from DCMS and Ofcom that there is a lot of demand for this, as Ofcom will be aware from all the expressions of interest they received last month to run multiplexes. So let's crack on with it and get it going. It's absurd to think that by the time our current license finishes, we will have been on air for nearly 5 years. And that's just crazy.
And David, you're presumably the same. You've got groups coming to you saying they want to apply for multiplexes and you're going to help them, so they will get on with it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm almost at the point of being fed up, but I'm not fed up. But I get that is the when the phone rings, there is a huge chance that it's going to be somebody asking me about, well, this thing is now going to start being licensed, isn't it, in quarter one next year? And I then have to sort of take them through a journey, which is a little bit painful for them and for me, because I'm realising I'm talking about DAB 20 so many years on, and it's typical of DAB, isn't it? It's been a very, very slow journey, and we're not at that destination yet. So when people ring me and they ask me about the timescales, I'm still having to point out that although the consultation has come in and all the expressions of interest have now been submitted, this still has to be put into statute. There still has to be amendments to the Communications Act, and then Ofcom have to do some form of consultation before they can then have the framework to issue the permanent licenses to the likes of myself and Ash and the other trialists, and also start advertising the areas of the 10 trialists, and then advertising other big metropolitan areas first. So there's still a little bit of a way to go, but I'm hoping that the summer will be very, very welcome next year.
Well, thank you both for coming on. It's good to talk to you. I'm sure this discussion will go on and on as well as we move forward in the next couple of years. So it's great to catch up with you both.
Thanks, you.
Yeah, big thanks to David and Ash. James Cridland is coming up. Also, David Lloyd's Radio Moment still to come. Quick word first about Clean Feed, which is really, really good. If you've not heard about it yet, not tried it out, it's definitely worth a go. It's basically something you use in your browser to get you hooked up to somebody else from a different place. It might be for an outside broadcast or an interview that you're doing for your show or your podcast, or co-hosting your program from somewhere different, like down the pub. It's designed for radio people and for podcasters as well, and it is really simple to connect live, decent quality audio in your browser. Quality, as I said, is great, and you can even record within the application in the browser as well. It doesn't cost you anything to get started, and CleanFeed will only take 30 seconds to sign up, it says here, and you could be doing your first live interview within a few minutes. Find out more at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net.
Thank you very much. I will. I'll do it now.
Are they still paying for that?
Yeah. Good. They are. Yeah, leave them on.
At james.crid.land, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, do you really need a radio building at all? I still remember my first look around a radio station. I wrote to Signal Radio in Stoke-on-Trent, and they ignored me. Shame on you, Signal. But Radio Air in Leeds held an open day, and I got to have a look round the studios with John Hammond. And I remember being amazed by the equipment and was astonished at how great the jingle sounded on the decent studio monitors and the equipment everywhere. But do you need an on-site playout system? The BBC's Vylor solution for their local radio stations keeps the fancy studios, but moves all of the playout equipment into a few regional centres. So as a presenter on a local station, you're not pressing play on a computer in the basement anymore, but one a few hundred miles away. The benefits here are pretty obvious: easier maintenance, more efficient air conditioning, cheaper studio facilities. Speaking at Next Radio, RCS's Philippe Generali unveiled a cloud-based system called Raptor.
We are announcing that we're ready to supply radio station with cloud software today. The first true cloud software that is built to work in the cloud from, and you can access it and have the engine work from anywhere.
Raptor moves all of the playout software for a typical radio station into the cloud. So RCS look after the racks and the transmitter link rather than your radio station. Actually, do you need a music library? OmniPlayer's playout system uses Spotify as well as your local audio, so you'll have access to any song that you need, almost. Actually, do you need expensive soundproof studios anyway? A few years ago, I wrote about Vista Radio, a company that I've been proudly working for the last 2 years in Canada, who don't have radio studios in their new facilities. Instead, their open-air studios are part of their office space, and if you're doing music programming, well, frankly, you don't need the type of heavy soundproofing that legacy studios have. If the only speech blocks are at breakfast, your office is quiet then anyway. And actually, do you need studios at all? For UK-based EDM station This Is Electric, their presenters are at home using their own home studio, typically a USB microphone into a laptop, controlling the playout software which is hosted for them by the UK company Broadcast Radio. The station's on DAB and on the internet. Come to that, do you need offices at all? Google's G Suite or Microsoft's Office 365 offers all the functionality you need for office work, alongside planning systems like WideOrbit or Acquirer. Actually, for most jobs, there's little need for anything other than a web browser. The team at Air, who do radio websites, apps, and many more things, don't have a head office at all, and they all work remotely from home. And there's no reason to spend all of that money on rent and office space if all of your team are remote workers. And I'm now hearing about FM radio stations in the UK who operate entirely virtually, no offices at all, presenters doing their shows from home, both live and voice tracked, and all back office work being done by home workers on systems based in the cloud. Many sales operations already work this way, so why not radio programming as well? In fact, this radio station also has a phone-in from a presenter's house. The discussion in the US earlier this year was all about the local studio rule, but it seems that the discussion for some forward-looking radio stations now is whether they need a building at all. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news from across the world at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now to the home studio of David Lloyd. Radio
Moments. Many things in radio come full circle, don't they? This week in 1997, alongside Kevin Greening, Zoe Ball began her national breakfast show.
I could have covered it up, but, you know, this is radio, isn't it?
You're not on telly now, love.
That's going to stick.
That is going to stick. Meet my new showbiz wife, Zoe Ball.
Thank you.
We've got Zoe Ball on board the what used to be the Kevin Greening breakfast show to make the whole thing funnier. I don't know why, because we could have got Steve Davis for half a cost. You know. So,
I've got very quiet all of a sudden, haven't I?
You have.
Is that true?
What?
Is that true? Look, there's one thing I say to you.
Yeah, you cost twice the...
We also have guests today on our first show that you would not believe, ladies and gentlemen. Teddy Sheringham on the telephone. Sadly, won't be here in person to sit on my knee. Also, Ian Broody. We live in the studio. He could sit on my knee, actually, talking about Rome and the football match this weekend. Was there a football match this weekend? Just
kidding.
Yeah,
I was there.
And at 10 past 8, we have
what
the Spice
What happened to
girls.
You?
Look, I'll tell you about that later.
All right.
You're missing my...
Zoe Ball with podcast. Kevin Greening on their first breakfast show at Radio 1, 21 years ago. And that same week, down the road at Virgin...
Tina.
Yes.
Better had be.
Okay.
You know you're not concentrating on your job.
I am.
£60,000 I paid Tina to leave Radio 1 to come and join us. And do you know what?
What?
Because all she can think about is a damn wedding at the moment.
Yeah.
Tina's getting married to Nicky Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Nicky starts his new show today on Radio 5. Why not try that and then come back here as swiftly as you
9 till 12.
Like?
9 till 12.
It's not on breakfast time.
No, then. 9 till 12. 9:09.
You're getting married on where?
13th of December.
Okay, and what frequency will that be?
Well, that's on a very loud frequency.
Because we live in radio life, you know that, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, because Dan's got married.
Yep.
By the way, if anybody wonders what was going on there, where Dan was concerned, Dan got married to Lisa in the end.
I did.
And we're going to be discussing Dan's marriage and whether it's been successful so far or not in the next half an hour. Tina, whether she should get married at all in the next half an hour.
Oh,
and whether anybody will ever even contemplate marrying Holly in the next half an hour. It's 7:36.
He is so debonair, and he's got ginger hair.
I think Virgin Radio is probably the jewel in the crown of all of it. It has to be. You know, we represent a triumvirate of national commercial stations, both, or rather representing different things. And I think it's really important. I think it's a bit unfortunate that we're deprived of being able to reach bigger audiences because of the quality of our signals and the type of signals we have. And I think it's the last bastion of monopolisation.
Chris Evans speaking about Virgin Radio's platform challenges as he began on Virgin this week in 1997. And of course, next year, Chris is back on the Virgin brand and Zoe and Chris starting rival shows together once more. BBC Local Radio was a two-year experiment originally. So this year, 50 years ago, Frank Gillard, who was the captain who'd steered it out of port, started to reflect.
By this time next year, we shall be engaged in the business of evaluating, for the Postmaster General, the success that the stations have had in the period of their operation as experiments. And it's on the strength of the assessment that will be made next year that decisions will be taken whether to go ahead with a great expansion of local radio or whether to curtail the operation, perhaps even to cancel what's happened so far.
Frank Gillard in 1968, managing expectations beautifully. Happy birthday, Stereo, born this week, 60 years ago.
Our regular listeners will, of course, know how to set up and adjust their receivers, but before we hear some music, Jimmy Kingsbury is going to give a few directions for anyone who may be listening to stereophonic broadcasting for the first time.
And to do so, I'm now moving from your right to a central position. Well, you need two receivers to hear this broadcast stereophonically. The one on the left should be tuned to Network 3, preferably on VHF, and the right-hand receiver to BBC television sound. The loudspeakers should be about the same height from the floor and spaced 6 to 10 feet apart.
Regular stereo transmissions beginning in London this week, 60 years ago. Now, can it really be 10 years since Saxgate?
Oh, no, Jonathan, don't, please. I'll do anything. I can owe my whole career to you.
Hello, Manuel here.
Right, sorry, I can't answer at the moment. But
I'm too busy thinking about killing myself because of the harsh truths of my daughter's social life. Right.
When you've left
just
your message,
yeah, we all know that. Why do they bother with that bit these days? It's a waste of our time listening to that bit. Andrew, this is Russell Brand. I'm so sorry about the last message. It was part of the radio show. It was a mistake.
Just a joke. I don't. If there is any truth in that, I don't know. It was just a joke.
And it was Russell, just a joke.
Russell asked me to say it as a joke.
It was just a joke that we done. Basically, I didn't ask him to say it though. But you know, aside from that bit, this one's true and the last one's not true. And this look.
Well, it might be true, but we didn't want to break it to you in such a harsh way.
Right. Okay. Look, the truth is, look, Andrew, I'm phoning you to ask if I can marry... That
Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand unwisely broadcasting the recorded conversation with Andrew Sachs's answerphone. Heads famously rolled, and compliance procedures in the BBC have never quite recovered. Isn't it good to know that 45 years ago this week, Capital was born?
This, for the very first time, is Capital Radio.
Some people have very fond memories of the early days of Capital Radio and, oh, it did sound so good. I thought it sounded crap. All we did was play Sergio Mendes records and Carpenter's records, and we had some horribly complicated music system, which was totally wrong, overcomplicated, and came out sounding like mush. And nobody listened.
Capital, the music and you.
12 minutes past 8 is the time. The Temptations with the Law of the Land. Monty's getting himself into pitch, says Don Blake. And this is Art Garfunkel. Art Garfunkel with a new Jim Webb composition called All I Know, and a beautiful production too. The time is 8:15, precisely. London's weather, cloudy, cold and wet. The temperature currently 48 degrees, rising to 52. Winds variable. And that's Lynn Anderson with Reason to Believe. Thank you. If you want to say it again, I don't mind. It's now 19 minutes past 8 o'clock. Whilst on the subject of Reason to Believe, don't forget that we on Capital Radio at 8:30 on Sunday mornings have a programme called A Question of Faith, which is a participation programme. And our address is Capital Radio, Euston Tower, London, NW1, 3DR, whatever your race, religion or creed. Okay.
Happy 45th anniversary for Capital Radio, born in the days of industrial unrest in the 1970s. And back then it was Capital Radio, wasn't it? Rather than Capital Radio, which it seems to be now. There we go. So, with Chiltern Radio launching from Dunstable 37 years ago...
Whatever your taste, whatever your interests, there will be something for you in our programmes.
The Queen's first radio appearance 78 years ago...
I feel that I am speaking to friends and companions.
Radio Victory launching in Portsmouth 43 years ago.
This is the station that touches you. Radio Victory on 257 metres of the medium wave band.
The final programme from Dave Cash 2 years ago.
Have yourself a wonderful week. See you next Saturday for 1970 and 1980, okay?
And commercial radio news provider IRN forsaking ITN in favour of Sky News as news supplier 10 years ago. Those are this week's radio moments.
Thank you, David Lloyd, and thanks to James Cridland and Roy Martin, and also to our guests this week, David Duffy and Ash Elford. Next week, will be at the Arias. I'll be talking to winners backstage, and Trevor Dan will be rounding up the night at the end of the podcast. So join us for that on the Radio Today programme next time.
Bye-bye.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.